This is Unfortunate History.
Hey everybody, welcome to Unfortunate History. This is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And this is a podcast that covers the wacky, interesting, and unfortunate moments from history. Greg, we've said it a couple of times, we're both musicians, aren't we?
We are indeed.
Yeah, we are. We've played together in multiple bands and that sort of thing. We're going to be diving into a little bit of unfortunate music history today.
All right, this is right down our alley, isn't it? Because we're both unfortunate and musicians.
Yeah, that's true. I think those go together more often than not.
they really do, don't they? It's a lot of unfortunate musician stories.
Yeah. Well, history is full of some truly unfortunate stories in the field of music. We got Elvis dying on the toilet, Kurt Cobain's alleged suicide, Michael Jackson's overdose, Jimi Hendrix's overdose, Prince's overdose.
The list goes on.
It goes on and on. But one of the most unfortunate stories lies with the man who was truly a jack of all trades and a master of all, Sammy Davis Jr.
One of the Rat Pack.
I would say the Rat Pack.
Yeah, Sinatra.
No, I would honestly argue that Sammy Davis Jr. had more talent than anybody else in the Rat Pack. We'll discuss a little bit why in a moment.
Oh, I'm not denying talent base, but I always thought, I'd say Sinatra was the Rat Pack. He was the main guy, wasn't he? But
when it comes to
talent, again, another one where I'm coming in kind of blind as a musician, I should probably know more about Sammy Davis Jr. I know who he is. I don't know an awful lot about his life.
Well, actually, Sammy Davis Jr. was quite possibly one of the most interesting musicians in all of music history and history in general. From singing midgets to the mob to satanic cults, Sammy Davis Jr.'s story has a lot of twists and turns. So, listeners, buckle up and let's dive into the life of one of the world's most incredible talents.
That was a lot more than I was expecting. I thought this would be one of those episodes, like, yeah, he had this life, it wasn't great, then he died. I wasn't expecting all that stuff then that you just mentioned.
There's quite a bit that goes into Sammy Davis Jr.'s life. I mean, a large majority of his life is just generally unfortunate, and we'll discuss why, obviously, in a moment, but he dealt with so many random different things that normal people just would not deal with. And then also, while we go through the episode, I think I'll point out the reasons why I think that Sammy Davis Jr. was really the face of some of the things, especially the groups that he was involved with earlier, even when he was not necessarily the main person in the groups. He was still the driving force behind all of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, this story does involve a few unfortunate moments, and I'll be pointing these out as we go along, most of them. Now, unlike many of our more historic episodes, we actually do know about the early life of Sammy Davis Jr.
That's got to be a podcast first.
That is, yeah. It's crazy. We actually know about him and his upbringing. He was actually born on December 8th, 1925 in Harlem.
Yeah. Harlem. That's not a nice place, is it?
It is not a nice place. It definitely wasn't a nice place at this point. I think it's gotten better. Obviously, with gentrification in bigger cities, a lot of these more not necessarily safe neighborhoods have actually been gentrified into being a bit more of a hipster type hangout place. It definitely happened in Nashville, where I'm from. So,
okay.
Now, as somewhat of a premonition of his later life, he was born into a very talented family. Davis's father, Sammy Davis Sr., was an entertainer and stage performer, and his mother, Elvira Sanchez, was a stage performer and a tap dancer. Both were said to have been vaudeville dancers.
Okay, cool. What the hell is a vaudeville dancer?
Vaudeville dancers are basically dancers that performed in revue shows, kind of like stuff you'd see. Nowadays, I guess you can compare it to like cruise ship entertainment shows and club entertainment shows where they'd come in, they'd do these singing and dancing routines on a stage, and then they'd do like four or five shows of those at night. If you think about the dancers in Las Vegas, you're probably getting a similar idea to what his parents were into.
Okay, I get you. I understand. That's given me a bit of an idea of what that is.
Now, since his parents worked quite a lot into the evening, as most entertainers do, he was said to have been brought up by his paternal grandmother. However, as most entertainers also do, his parents divorced when he was three. Yeah. Now, his father didn't want to lose custody of Sammy Davis. So, in what was likely a very defining moment for him, Sammy Davis Sr. decided to take his son on tour with him and Will Mastin, who was described as somewhat of an uncle to Sammy Davis Jr. Now, this would prove to be the beginning of an incredible career for Sammy Davis Jr.
Can you imagine that, like, as a kid going on tour?
And not even just a kid, 3 years old.
Oh, but cyanide, that just got me thinking. Also, could be a recipe for disaster. Let's look what that did to the Jacksons.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you tons of stories like that from musical history that just destroyed children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to let kids be kids, man.
Sometimes you do, and they absolutely did not, as I'll point out in a moment. Now, Sammy Davis Jr. quickly learned to dance from his father and his uncle, Will Mastin. And very soon, he began performing with the group, which began to be called the Will Mastin Trio. Now, in this act, Davis was apparently billed as, quote, Silent Sam, the 44-year-old dancing midget.
So he's been literally already been passed off as a midget.
Seriously, completely avoiding the fact that he is a kid. Let him be a kid. No, they billed him as a middle-aged midget. Quote, unquote. Not my word. Not my word, obviously. Now, he actually continued to form with the trio, all the while developing his entertainment skills, which will come into unbelievable use later. Now, these skills truly came into use in 1941, when the Will Mastin Trio was asked to fill in as an opening act for Frank Sinatra at a gig in Detroit.
Ah, that's where the link is.
Yeah. Now, this particular show would prove to be life-changing for Sammy Davis Jr., but not instantly. In fact, another life-changing event would occur first, World War II.
I was about to say, when's that little event going to pop in here? As soon as you mentioned the 1941, I thought, oh, there's something around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. By around the time that he met Frank Sinatra the first time, he was, I think, 16.
Mm.
And then 2 years later, Sammy Davis Jr. was drafted into the Army. Now, this particular event was not necessarily life-changing. What affected Davis most about his time in the military, which is our first unfortunate moment in this story, by the way, was that this was his first true introduction to blatant racism.
This was his first... It's gone, what? How many? 18 years without seeing the huge amount of racism in America that time.
It's very interesting, actually, because during his time with the trio, he had never really witnessed the racism outright because his father and his uncle had both kept it from him under the guise of people being jealous of their entertaining skills. And they basically hid him from the truth of racism being so prevalent in America.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that would that be, is that a good thing or a bad thing for a kid? Like, it's a good thing because, you know, you're keeping it kind of... Although you are billing him as a middle-aged midget, but I suppose you are keeping the harsh reality of that racism, especially then, and still to this day, is a thing. But would it not have been better if he'd... I don't know. What was it?
That's a hard decision, to be honest,
yeah.
Because obviously racism, especially at this time, and we've talked about Emmett Till in that, we know that racism was awful at this point. It's difficult to know whether it would have been better to tell him from a young age or not, but obviously telling him from a young age might affect him in a way where he doesn't, prosper or doesn't necessarily grow up.
He feels like he's already set up for failure.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, actually, even that point comes into play in just a moment where he kind of feels that he's set up for failure and not in a position that white people are in. So it's very interesting that he got this far in his life and he really didn't have an introduction to racism.
That is very interesting. I was not expecting that.
Yeah. Well, actually, when he was drafted into the Army, he was actually drafted into the Army's first racially integrated unit, or one of the first racially integrated units in military history.
What, so they just kept them separate?
Oh, yeah. Up to this point, it was black units and white units.
I wonder who got sent into the firing line first out of those units prior to this then.
It was probably the 44-year-old dancing midgets.
Yep, that's I kind of knew the answer to that as I was asking the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously being introduced or being drafted into the Army, one of the Army's first racially integrated units, would not be smooth sailing for a black man in the 1940s.
It's so stupid. You're on the same side.
It doesn't make any sense. Even in the army, you're fighting against a whole nother force. You still have to be segregated within your own force. That's insane.
Yeah, it's literally counterproductive. Like, you're literally, so you got an enemy that you hate, and then your fellow soldier that you hate purely on skin tone. You're like, what the fuck?
It doesn't make any sense at all. No, I agree. But obviously, you can tell that the army was trying to integrate it more to get rid of segregation, which is good, but it didn't stop people from getting into pretty bad bust-ups, as we'll see in a moment, because Sammy Davis Jr. was not one to take this sort of thing lying down.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Davis faced racism so frequently that he was having actual brawls with white soldiers nearly every other day.
Jesus.
He described one occasion where a white secretary came to ask him a question, and I think in the documentary that I watched, he said that she was the secretary of the general in charge, or the colonel in charge of special forces, I think it was, and she came to ask him a question, possibly about joining the special forces, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But while he was speaking with this white secretary, a group of white soldiers noticed it. So they decided to corner him a couple of days later at the enlisted club on the base. They took him outside, and then all of a sudden, just a brawl broke out. They overpowered him, stripped him naked, and painted him white, saying that he obviously wanted to be white if he wanted to talk to white women.
For fuck's sake, come on.
Yeah, you can imagine. They're literally in the same army. That's insane to me.
Because he wasn't a particularly big guy, was he? I think he was quite a short man.
No, I was going to say that. Yeah, he was 5'5".
Even in those times, not very big.
No, he was not big at all. He was known very much as a smaller gentleman. And this kind of speaks to him as a person, because he would fight everybody all the time. He would fight everybody else. No matter how small he was, he would fight them all the time. I mean, some of the other moments included him having his nose broken numerous times, which is what gave it that permanently flattened look that you'll see in all of his photos, is because in his time in the military, he was getting his nose broken constantly.
It's World War II, like the main enemy, the Germans. You know what I mean? Like, their thing was to be racist.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. And you've got Americans doing it inside their own military. It's crazy. And even on another occasion, as another kick to the teeth, he was offered a beer laced with urine. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Now, Davis fought. I'm going to be calling him Davis, because I just didn't feel right calling him Sammy, by the way. That's why I'm referring to him as Davis.
Wasn't exactly like we knew him.
No, exactly. And it doesn't sound right saying Davis when it's Sammy Davis Jr. You always know. It always sounds right saying Sammy Davis Jr., but I'm not going to say that because it'll just sound clunky. Mm-hmm. It's just as clunky as this explanation sounds. I'm going to call him as Davis most of the time, or his full name, just so you guys know. Just to be respectful, I know I did that with Delphine. I didn't do that with Delphine. It wasn't because I think any less of women, I promise you. It's just because her last name changed so frequently. Now, Davis fought every chance he could get against all of the racism he experienced. But he started to notice that no matter how many times he would fight, even if he would win, the racist just kept coming back. So, finally, he decided that there was another way that he could fight back, through talent and showmanship.
Yes, it's, I feel like that's how everyone gets into music or dance or some sort of art. It's our own way of fighting back against the naysayers.
Exactly. I mean, it's a great way to fight back, because he brings them over to his turf, basically. Now, after he discharged from the army, Sammy Davis Jr. reunited with the Will Mastin Trio. However, he started pushing himself to do more than just dance.
I was going to say, did you ever get deployed with the army work? Or
there wasn't much information about that, no. I think he was only in for a short time, but I'm sure it's in his... I didn't see it in his biography, but I'm sure it's in there somewhere. I've only had a couple of days, really, to research this, but...
Yeah, this is a very quick cut.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it just went from literally he was 18, and then I think at this point he's like 22. He didn't stay in the military very long. So if you want to learn more about that, just look up. He had his own biography, an autobiography he wrote and that sort of thing. So if you want to look more into detail on that. But obviously the most forming thing of his time in the military was the racism that he experienced.
Literally his own side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not even the Nazis, just the Americans.
Not the Nazis, not the Japanese. The Americans.
Yeah. Now, in addition to his amazing dancing skills, he began singing and very importantly, doing impressions. His impressions were actually legendary. He could do anybody. It was crazy. And soon, the trio actually gained enough notoriety to make their way into some of the most famous clubs in Las Vegas, which is huge for a black trio.
It is.
Huge for it, especially at this time. Now, I say that because the trio was actually being adored at this point, and this was by white audiences. Even these impressions that he was doing, these impressions were of white people.
You could see how that might take a bad turn for him. So it's surprising that it's working out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first time he did impressions on one of their shows in the trio, they pulled him off stage afterward, and his father and Will were like, don't you ever do that again. I mean, it's thinking that obviously it would not end well. But the white audiences ate it up. They loved it. And they were adoring them at this point, like I said, while they were on stage.
Mm-hmm.
When they were off stage, they were treated just as badly as all other African Americans. They weren't even allowed to use the front doors of the clubs that they were performing in. They weren't allowed to stay in the hotels they were performing in. They had to stay in separate accommodation on an entirely separate Las Vegas strip meant for black people, even though they were being applauded every single night by white people. Now, this was actually really common around the United States at the time, even in New York, which you would assume would be a bit more relaxed in this area.
Was New York more relaxed on that front?
It actually wasn't. On actually one occasion, Davis and a group of his friends went to see Frank Sinatra perform at the New York club, the Copacabana, or Copacabana, I think it's Copacabana, but they were actually turned away at the door. However, Sinatra made Davis come back the next night, and he walked into the club by himself, effectively breaking down a sort of barrier, which kind of started a trend. However, I couldn't actually find any information on if the friends he had originally tried to take to the club with him also came. I believe it was just him alone. So it also might seem like a thing like Frank Sinatra said, look, I can get you in, but I can't get your friends in.
I don't have that much sway just yet.
Yeah, it seemed like that might have been kind of what happened. But either way, at least it was a step forward.
Baby steps, I guess.
Yeah. Now, throughout all of this racism, Sammy Davis Jr. never stopped fighting back with his talent. This hard work would actually eventually pay off when Davis got his first big break. In 1951, the Will Mastin Trio was asked to open at the famous Hollywood nightclub, Ciro's. You know.
Yeah, man. Hotspot, yeah. Know all about that place.
I opened up for Nickelback there. It was great.
Look at this graph.
Well, the trio was originally meant to perform for 20 minutes to open up for Janis Paige. However, the crowd loved the trio so much, Sammy Davis Jr. especially, and they continued to perform for almost an hour.
I can't picture, what was it? What was the headliner called? Who was she? Janis
Paige.
I can't picture her being too impressed by that, but
she was very impressed by it.
Oh, I thought you'd be angry.
No, she was so impressed because they were so talented. I mean, on this particular night, Sammy Davis Jr. was said to have come out with this tap dancing routine that was incredible. And there's actually videotape of it, and you can look it up on YouTube. The stuff that he does, I mean, I'm talking flips while he's doing tap dancing. It's insane. And after this particular show, Janis Paige insisted, she went to the bar manager, insisted that the order of the show be flipped to her opening up for the trio.
She's got a hold of her ego then, fucking hell. Can you imagine anyone giving up the headline slot?
No, absolutely not.
Now, I'm not doing that. They're off the tour. They're too good.
Yeah, definitely not in Las Vegas.
Nope.
Ever. And she's a white woman. But she knew that this group had amazing talent, especially Sammy Davis Jr. I mean, and this goes to my point of him being the talent of the shows. The crowd was into it, but they were not. They were really into them and stuff, and they were really impressed. But when he started doing his impressions, they went nuts.
Really?
Yeah, they absolutely went crazy for him.
See, I've got a history of trying to do impressions on this podcast, and nobody goes nuts. Nobody goes nuts for mine because they all just sound like me.
Oh man, no, like do Chief Running Water.
Chief Running Water.
You slags, fuck you, you slags.
Listen up, you slag, yeah. You saying I'm the craze, yeah. Chief running water, slag. My name's Sammy Davis Jr., yeah. I can do backflips and tap dance, you slag. That's just going to be my go-to now for everything.
That's it. That's all. That's the main impression. I was going to try to do a Sammy Davis Jr. impression, but I can't really get it. It's like Sammy Davis Jr., babe. Like
Sammy Davis Jr.
Babe. I'm going to do impressions for you tonight, everybody, babe.
Here's my impression of a like a mid-range American man, and then you just go you just cut to your own voice, like.
Yeah, I can't really do an American accent. Mine is box standard, buddy. I'm like box standard. Well, following this world-changing show, Sammy Davis Jr. was on the rise. He couldn't be stopped. He was an absolute force to be reckoned with. This man's skills, I'm telling you, it could never be overstated. He could dance like no one else. He could sing just as good as Frank Sinatra. His singing, some of the you can look it up on YouTube. I'm telling you, some of his singing is incredible, and his impressions were obviously uncanny. He was an absolute powerhouse. However, his incredible rise would come with a pretty terrible fall and another unfortunate moment in this story.
Well, it kind of seems like that with a lot of people who become stars. What goes up must come down.
Yeah, and I think if you were to graph out Sammy Davis Jr.'s chart, it would look like a Donald Trump run business. for projected profits, just all over the fucking place. I'm not being political. I'm just saying he has had a lot of failed businesses.
Arguably all failed businesses.
Quite a few of them.
What do I know? I'm a Brit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We're not being political. I promise. Believe whatever you want. I'm just saying that he has failed businesses. I have failed businesses.
I don't even have a business.
You don't know. You don't fucking know. Well, Sammy Davis Jr. at one point, after a show or a string of shows, was driving from Las Vegas to Los Angeles in 1954 when he was almost killed in a very severe car crash.
Okay.
Now, the year prior, interestingly enough, Davis had befriended a Jewish comedian named Eddie Cantor, and Cantor had given Davis a mezuzah, which is a Jewish artifact. It's a bit of parchment enclosed in a small case, and it's normally affixed to your front door or like a doorpost on your home. But Davis wasn't actually Jewish, not at this time, so he actually took to wearing it around his neck for good luck. But the car crash happened on the only night that Davis had decided to not wear his necklace.
Is this where his Judaism kicks in?
Not just yet.
Oh.
Yeah. But during the crash, Davis's eye was damaged because of a bullet-shaped horn button.
What?
Basically, his face smashed into the bullet-shaped horn button and punctured his eye.
Ugh.
Which led to him losing his left eye completely.
Fuck, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people actually don't know that. He did survive this crash, but the loss of his eye actually meant that he would need to learn and, well, really relearn his movements, because obviously his depth perception was greatly affected by this. And this type of injury can destroy an entertainer's career, especially in this time period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess surgical prowess wasn't quite, especially with eyes. Can't picture it being quite up to scratch.
Well, even then, with no eye, no matter what happens, if you lose sight in one of your eyes, your depth perception is affected, and you have to relearn a lot of things. Otherwise, you're going to be walking into walls, pushing children into traffic accidentally. You don't want to do that. Not as a black man in the 1940s.
No. You've already been dealt a tough hand. Let's not make it worse.
Yeah. Now, instead of letting Sammy Davis Jr. sulk due to his injuries, his friends, including Frank Sinatra, pushed him out of bed and towards recovery as soon as possible. And he soon regained his footing just in time for this car crash to actually make him a national celebrity.
Really?
Yeah. So the news coverage from this particular car crash just catapulted him up. So he had this huge drop off from this terrible injury, losing an eye completely. And then the news coverage from that just shot him right back up.
No way. So it kind of worked for him.
It worked for him. Obviously, he was really distraught because from that moment in the military, it was his goal to be the best. And he had worked really hard, and he actually was literally the best at the stuff that he was doing. At least literally the best compared to the people that were around him. And he, obviously this injury would put him in a terrible place. But like I said, his friends had his back. They did not let him sulk in these injuries.
All he needed, if only he had YouTube.
Yeah.
If he just uploaded, made a YouTube channel, God, Sammy Davis Jr. YouTube channel, internet stardom.
Yeah, yeah, you can get, or put his songs on Spotify, make a fraction of a cent a stream. There you go.
He'd probably have a podcast and it'd be really fucking, it'd be really fucking good as well.
Welcome to the podcast, babe.
I'm your host, Sammy Davis Jr. Welcome to Unfortunate History, part two.
Well, at this point, after this crash and after his recovery, Sammy Davis Jr. was still making waves. He was writing songs and acting in different television shows and films, all while performing constantly. And I can't understate that. He was performing constantly.
That's a lot of work, a lot of graft.
He was a powerhouse, man, not just with his skills, but how much he wanted to work. He was literally from morning to night, constantly working. It's crazy. Well, with all of this hard work came notoriety, good notoriety. But this would also soon turn against him into somewhat bad notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1957, Davis began dating Kim Novak, a white actress. Supposedly, Davis was incredibly in love with Novak, and Novak apparently shared the same feelings.
Not really, not going to be accepted by the public, though, is it?
Not very accepted. It's unfortunate because it was really the first moment in Sammy Davis Jr.'s life where he loved someone enough to actually want to marry them. You know, it there's no other mention of that before Kim Novak. But his rumor of marrying this white actress started to spread.
Hmm.
However, as with almost every aspect of Davis's life, white people were not happy about it.
Well, God, we've been pissed off at a lot of stuff throughout history, haven't we, us whiteys?
Yeah, we really have. We need to calm down. We need to chill out. Let other people be upset. We're okay. We've done quite well for ourselves, if we're honest.
Yeah.
Now, one particular white racist that didn't like the idea of Davis marrying Novak was her boss, Harry Cohn, or Cohn. I think it might be Cohn.
I think it's pronounced cunt.
Yeah, Harry Cunt. Yeah, what a prick. Now, Harry Cohn was the head of Kim Novak's film studio, Columbia Pictures, which is obviously still around today. Huge Hollywood film studio. Now, he believed that Novak's marriage to a black man, even an incredibly famous and beloved black man, would affect the studio's profits. He thought that their films would stop getting as many, would stop selling as many tickets. It's pretty crazy. So, he did what any sane white man would do. He hired the mob to threaten Sammy Davis Jr.
Fucking hell. Why? It just, I know it's the time, but it's just stupid.
That's going to be the theme of the entire episode is, oh my God, why are they hating black people so much? It's going to be, that's it. That's just the theme of a large majority of Sammy Davis Jr.'s life. And that is the saddest thing about it because he was such an incredible person. Not to say that he was a perfect person. I'm just saying that he was incredibly talented and he was pushed down by this archaic view.
I was under the impression that Sinatra had ties with the mob.
Yeah, I believe he might have. I believe he did. But we're not going to go into that because we will have a Frank Sinatra episode.
Okay, then. That's a future episode right there, guys.
Now, reportedly, the mobsters did threaten Davis, and they threatened him with blinding his remaining eye and breaking his legs if he didn't marry a black woman within 48 hours.
Jesus Christ, that's not a lot of time to find someone to marry.
No, it isn't. But he did.
Oh, he's a talented guy.
Yeah, he is a talented guy, yeah. He tried to get protection from another mob boss, but apparently this mob boss was based in Chicago, and that might have been through ties with Frank Sinatra.
Hmm.
But that mob boss said, I can protect you if you're in Chicago, but I cannot protect you in LA, and I can't protect you in New York. So he didn't really have anything, any recourse to it. So he actually did have to give up his relationship with Kim Novak, and This completely destroyed Sammy Davis Jr. because he took all these threats very seriously, and he was losing this woman that was literally, at this point, the love of his life.
Imagine being forced to do that, like, imagine, like, generally loving someone so much and then being told, no, literally, we will take everything from you if you do this.
I mean, listeners, like, you imagine that your significant other, someone comes into your house and says, you're going to have to stop seeing them or I'm going to break your legs.
And blind you.
And blind you. Well, I guess in this situation, it would be blinding you in both eyes because Sammy Davis Jr. was already blinded. They wanted to make him completely blind. Mm-hmm. So imagine that. How would you feel about that? That's insane, man. Like that's like nobody would be okay with that. And you can you can only imagine how badly it affected Sammy Davis Jr.
Mm, yeah, I can imagine. Well, no, I can't imagine. I've never had anything remotely like that happen to me. So I can't really imagine how it must be just purely because of his race.
No, exactly. I mean, I can sympathize with it. I can understand that it's got to be terrible, but I can't understand the depths of how terrible it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to protect himself from mob violence, Davis decided to marry a black dancer named Lorraine White. This was known to everybody. Everyone knew this as a sham marriage. And it was literally only done because of the threats that Davis received from the mob. He agreed to actually pay White a lump sum under the condition that their marriage would be dissolved within a year. Now, the couple went ahead with a traditional wedding, but the entire ordeal was a bit too much for Davis, and he drank way too much at the reception. And he was said to have tried to strangle White on their way to their wedding suite. And then he was found later that evening with a gun to his head attempting to take his own life. And I think the quote that he was saying is, why won't they just let me live my life? Or why can't I be with the person I love? Which is, imagine on your wedding night, putting a gun to your head and...
And also trying to strangle your new wife. It's not her fault that white people are assholes.
No, it's not. And again, I will reiterate that I'm not saying that Sammy Davis Jr. was perfect. He obviously had issues. I mean, and that's the alcohol, isn't it? I mean, later on we'll talk more about his alcoholism and stuff.
I think alcoholism was very common with people back then. Like,
so it was part and parcel with the time. I mean, you just walked in and had a martini. That was just it. You know, and that was just the way of life. But we'll see how it affected Sammy Davis Jr. a little later. Now, Davis's marriage to White was short-lived. They divorced about a year later or a couple months later in 1959. This was a particularly low moment in Davis's life. But it would soon pick back up that same year. This was the year that he got his second big break, when Frank Sinatra asked him to become a member of the famous Rat Pack.
All right.
I'll give you a little bit of a tidbit on why they called it the Rat Pack.
Isn't it because they were just kind of womanizing alcoholic?
Kind of, yeah. Well, it's, I think it was Liza Minnelli maybe that said this, possibly. I'm not 100% sure. But originally, Frank Sinatra wanted to call it the Klan, which was a fucking bad idea. I don't know why he would want that. And then Sammy Davis Jr. obviously made it known that, no, that would be way too close to the KKK.
Mm.
And they ended up mulling over the names. And then while they were together at one point, I thought it was Liza Minnelli, but I'm probably wrong. A famous woman, a singer, saw them and said, oh, you guys look like a pack of rats. And then it just stuck with them. They just said, okay, well, we'll go with Rat Pack. And it's a pretty damn cool name. It's like a cool cat name, you know?
It is cool, but it's also, is it only cool because we associate it with them? Like, if he's in a band and someone went, let's call ourselves the Rat Pack.
And they're like a grunge band that doesn't shower.
Yeah, as a grunge band, it works, I guess. But
I guess it only works when you're like a very straight-laced, walking around in a suit with a nice glass of scotch, and you can sing really well. That's what make, yeah, the Rat Pack doesn't make the man makes the Rat Pack.
Nice.
Put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Well, Sammy Davis Jr.'s time in the Rat Pack was one of the most famous of his career. Many people may remember him as an actor or a singer in the Will Mastin Trio, but the Rat Pack is what everyone associates with Davis's career.
Yep, that's what I know him for.
Yeah, absolutely. And another little tidbit as well. While he's in the Rat Pack, he's also performing solo. And by about this time, he's more than likely being asked to perform as himself, not the Will Mastin Trio.
Mm-hmm.
But this speaks to his character. Instead of cutting out his father and his uncle, every single performance he did, he had his father and uncle there. And all of the money he made, I think it was 15 years or so's worth, he paid them 33.33% of everything, each.
So basically like a fair split, isn't it? Like,
he split everything with them throughout his career. And that's actually, I mean, you can imagine he did a whole career working, dancing, singing his butt off. And he made 33.33% of what he would have normally made had he cut them out.
God, I can't even imagine the blisters and sore throats that man must have had.
It's not, yeah, that, and imagine tap dancing. Tap dancing can be grueling, man.
Like, just blistered feet constantly.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Definitely speaks to his character.
It's just hardworking.
Very hardworking.
Not many people are built like that these days, I think.
No, I couldn't even imagine being as hardworking as he is. And it's all in a small package as well. He's just like, you know, 5'5", but just wind him up and watch him go.
It's just like a little firecracker once it's lit. It didn't stop him.
Yeah, God, I would have loved to have had a drink with him.
Oh, yeah.
Not well, I hope he wouldn't try to strangle me, but I would I would want to have a drink with him and just talk to him. He just seems like an incredible guy.
I suppose it'd be a pretty cool way to go, strangled by Sammy Davis Jr., but again, he is 5'5". I suppose you could just, you know, hand on the forehead and just get off. Just move, go away, you little shit.
You never know, man. Short guys can be crafty. I know there's definitely some short people listening. I'm not saying that 5'5 is necessarily short. I'm not going to say it. But there are some shorter people listening, and I guarantee some of them could beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, I'm not denying it. Yeah. I'm not denying that they could beat the shit out of me either.
Anyway, Well, Floyd Mayweather, he's like 5'6", isn't he?
I think he's like 5'8".
Is he 5'8"?
He's like an inch smaller than me, and he is a dangerous man.
He is a dangerous man. In the ring, I could probably take him with a gun. not saying I would shoot him. I'm just saying that I could probably take him if I had a weapon, and he did.
Just all we have to do is change the, you know, turn the tables a bit. Having a gun against Floyd Mayweather is just called evening the odds.
Yeah, exactly. The dude is dangerous, man. He is a great fighter.
I'm not going to go fist to fist with him.
I'm not an idiot. Come on. Now, obviously, Sammy Davis Jr. was with the Rat Pack for a long time, and he had quite a few moments with them, but there's one particular moment that really affected him. Now, this moment was in relation to President John F. Kennedy. Yeah. This guy gets around. He knows everybody. He's experienced everything, and we're not even to the craziest part of the story yet.
We're not.
No, we're not even to the craziest part of the story. The mob threatening him, not even the craziest part.
Jesus, it's an interesting life. I might have to pick up this autobiography after listening to this, because it does sound a bit mad.
Please be aware that we have affiliated links on our website, and some of the money does go to us. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just joking. We don't make any money from this podcast. You kidding me?
Of course not.
I'm losing money on this podcast.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, the Rat Pack campaigned for John F. Kennedy during his 1960 presidential campaign. They contributed directly to his election as president. They were actively trying to get him elected. And Sammy Davis Jr. even considered JFK a friend, which was actually true. In fact, a part of JFK's campaign focused on the black community and their struggles. It's actually said, this is anecdotal, but it is said that a lot of the black families' homes in the country, in America, would actually have three photos in their home. They'd have one of Jesus, one of Martin Luther King, and one of John F. Kennedy.
No way. That's mad.
Yeah. Supposedly. That's an older generation thing, obviously.
Yeah.
But you're talking in their grandparents' home or in children's older parents' homes. They would have had those three pictures because JFK was said to have been such a good friend to the black community.
Yeah, well, we all know how a JFK story ends, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, at this moment in history, the civil rights movement was in full swing, so it was important to not alienate black voters. However, it actually became apparent that JFK also didn't want to alienate his white Southern voters either.
In that day and age, you can't really have both, can you?
You cannot have both. You had to pick a side. But he didn't. Now, at the same time of the 1960s presidential race, Sammy Davis Jr. had actually met another white woman who he quickly fell for, the Swedish-born actress Mai Britt.
Jesus Christ, you don't get much whiter than Swedish born, do you?
No, you don't. No, yeah, that's like Sweden, the cradle of white people.
The creme de la creme of white.
Yeah. Now, although interracial marriages were actually still illegal in many states in America at this time, and only 4% of Americans supported interracial marriages, Davis and Britt were actually married.
Yeah, fuck the system.
But soon after this, JFK won the election and became president. And Davis was actually really excited to attend his inauguration with his new wife. He had actually been asked to perform. However, just before the inauguration, he was uninvited by JFK, effectively giving Sammy Davis Jr. a giant slap in the face for all of his support.
Why do you uninvite him?
Well, JFK's aides said that having him there, since he was married to a white woman, would tarnish his image.
How? It's Sammy Davis Jr.
I don't know. And it was a huge slap in the face to Sammy Davis Jr. It was awful. And actually, an even more slap in the face, I don't remember who it was, but there was another black man there with his white wife.
Surely, wouldn't Sammy Davis Jr. been the most famous black guy with a white wife?
I don't know at this time. I didn't look that up.
That was a dick move from JFK.
It was a huge dick move. It was very unfair. And that I think that greatly affected Sammy Davis Jr. Now, it was sometime after his shunning by JFK that Davis began to enter his partying stage, shall we say.
He's only just started.
When I say partying, I mean truly hardcore rock and roll partying.
Woo!
He was said to have begun participating in huge orgies while drinking heavily and experimenting with cocaine.
Sounds like a blast, man.
He sounds rock and roll. But these weren't the only things Davis was beginning to dabble in. At this point, he was also getting his introduction into the occult. The Church of Satan was founded in California in 1966, and apparently Sammy Davis Jr. felt a great affinity towards the church, although he had already, at this point, converted to Judaism. Or Judaism.
Did a lot of bouncing around.
Yeah. Well, this is likely to have been introduced to him through the orgies and drug circles he was in, because everyone knows that the Church of Satan sure loves a good orgy and a bit of cocaine. If Satan wants you to have anything, it's a diet of orgy and cocaine.
That's what hell is. It's just a big party with hookers and blow.
That's all it is, yeah. A big party, but you have to sit and watch. And it's all like fat, like Rosie O'Donnell just getting reamed by...
reamed?
Reamed by Hitler. It's just like, and you have to watch this orgy, and then the cocaine is like shoved up your butt as opposed to sniffing it.
While the Cry twins stand there wanking each other off. You slag.
Oh my God. I can't imagine two identical males just jerking off their identical penises. It's just weird.
Not even in the right things. It's like the face in each of us. So it's like thumb first. Like,
oh no. You mean like a backwards jerk?
Kind of, yeah. Like you thought the opposite way you typically jerk.
And you're like, and you finally, over the years during this torture, you kind of get into it and you're like, can you please just turn your hand around? I need to see him finish. He's like the whole time, neither of them finishes. And you're like,
they're clearly not enjoying it. Like, but they just keep doing it. Like.
Oh God, it's so dry.
This cocaine isn't helping anything.
Well, here is one particularly interesting story from Sammy Davis Jr.'s Church of Satan days. This is very, very interesting, and it will tie into a lot of true crime stuff. You true crime buffs will actually really enjoy this. Now, this particular moment involved Davis being invited to a satanic party by a few friends, and when he arrived, he found everyone there in robes with a naked woman tied spread eagle on an altar. However, Davis later wrote, and I think this was in his autobiography, quote, should I do it in his voice?
Do it in his voice. Do it in his voice.
I'm Sammy Davis Jr., babe. Okay, I'll try it. that chick was happy. That chick was happy, babe, and wasn't really going to get anything sharper than a dildo stuck in her.
Well, dildos, if you could carve a dildo to be sharp, I guess.
Yeah, but obviously his point was that she would not be sacrificed on this altar. She was just going to be part of an orgy.
This is just a kinky thing.
Yeah, but to that point of not being stuck with anything sharper, another member at the party wouldn't be as lucky.
Hmm.
Now, at one point in the evening, as Davis was doing drugs and being quote-unquote serviced...
Nice.
One of the ritual leaders pulled back his hood to reveal that he was actually Sammy Davis Jr.'s barber, Jay Sebring.
Huh.
Now, some of you true crime aficionados may recognize this name. If you don't recognize this name, you may recognize the name of Sebring's fiance, Sharon Tate.
I know that name.
This is the same Sharon Tate that would later be murdered by the Manson family during the infamous Manson family massacre. And Jay Sebring would be right there with Sharon Tate, bound to her, shot, and stabbed 7 times.
Holy shit. What a crossover.
What a crossover. Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small world, man.
That is insane. Now, Sammy Davis Jr. actually kept some of his ties to the Church of Satan, sometimes going out in public with one of his fingernails painted to show allegiance.
Is it really, though, or is it just one of those conspiracy theories where, you know, like yet now where with like the Illuminati because they make a triangle with the hands or something like that? Maybe you just liked having a painted fingernail.
No, actually, he was even said to have been given a Church of Satan medallion, which he wore at the show where it was presented to him.
You know what?
I don't know if it was saying like, oh, I love Satan or anything like that, but I think he was showing allegiance to the people in the Church of Satan saying, these are my friends. I like these guys. They're cool people.
I don't think Satanism is what everyone seems to think it is.
No, I don't. No, it's not. It's more of a code.
I think it's more of a fuck you to Christianity, and we're gonna do this, and all the bad shit you guys do, we're not gonna have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the code that they live by is, it's generally Church of Satan is just a code. It's more of a way to live without harming other people, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, at this point, it did involve a bunch of orgies and a bunch of drugs.
Not hurting anyone.
Not hurting anyone, no. Not
providing everyone is consenting adults.
Yeah, and there's no 12, 13 inches in the place. You know, get out of here, Steve.
What have we told you after last time? A lot of us bled.
Go be a fucking Catholic.
Go hang out with the pedophiles. Sorry, any Catholics or Christians.
Or pedophiles.
Sorry to our pedophile listenership.
No, fuck you guys.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
Fuck off the podcast, you assholes. Fight me.
What would you do if our listenership just went down to 0 from that comment?
I would probably be okay with it. I don't give a shit. Now, Sammy Davis Jr. would also welcome many of the Church of Satan guests at his shows, sometimes leaving them front row seats available. At one point, the Church of Satan actually gave him an honorary second-degree Church of Satan membership, which made Sammy Davis Jr. an honorary warlock of the Church of Satan.
Pretty sweet.
Okay, let's just recap. This guy has lost his eye from it being punctured during a bad car crash. He's gone from nothing to famous. He's fought racism. He knew the president on a first name basis.
He found love and got threatened into not having that.
He survived being threatened by the mob, and he's an honorary warlock of the Church of Satan.
Yeah, man.
If you don't have a poster of Sammy Davis Jr. on your wall right now, you need to get your life together. Now, we are going to go into a bit more of the unfortunate side of things.
It's never a happy ending on this podcast, is it?
Not never, but most of the time, no. Now, JFK's previously mentioned betrayal may have been what eventually pushed Sammy Davis Jr. to actually support the Republican Richard Nixon during his presidential campaign and during his presidency.
I feel like that, again, was more of just a fuck you stance because you fucked me over, so I'm going to fuck you over.
Yeah, I don't know if he necessarily was jaded, or I feel like I would have been jaded by JFK if I would have shown him so much support and he uninvited me specifically. I would have probably been jaded, and I probably would have said, you know what, if this is how the Democratic Party behaves, I'm going Republican. I think literally the person at the top of the Democratic Party, if they shunned me, I think I might contemplate going Republican if I were Sammy Davis Jr. If I put myself in his shoes like this, you know, I can see that. And he was actually pictured hugging Richard Nixon, which was a huge slap in the face to the black community. That I'm not saying that it legitimately was. I'm saying that it was seen as a huge slap in the face to the black community.
Did the black community turn on him at that point then?
They very much did. They thought of him as a Uncle Tom, a sellout, that sort of thing. The black community did not like this at all, because Richard Nixon was not seen as a huge supporter of civil rights, even though this was an enormous time for civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And he was seen as more of a sellout. And from this point, it's almost like he became a satire of himself. What would you say?
It's almost like a parody of himself.
Exactly. He was more of a parody of who he was before, instead of being known as this incredible entertainer. Now, this began a true downfall for Davis in the face of the public. And his drug and alcohol abuse had steadily grown up to this point, and he was truly pressing his luck, really.
Playing with fire.
Yeah. At one point, he actually opened a show with a single song, stopped the show afterwards, and said goodnight. And that was not like Sammy Davis Jr. at all. He was nothing like that. Now, he did actually eventually quit using cocaine, but the drinking was another story.
Arguably, again, even though it's a legal substance, it can arguably be the worst and most damaging.
Oh yeah, man. And it's like, oh man, you really have to be careful with it. You really have to be careful with alcohol. It can ruin your life just as bad as any other drugs.
Like I said, it's good to blow off steam every now and again, but when it gets out of hand, it can sometimes lead to no coming back, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you have to be careful. You really do. Now, Davis actually began having issues with his wife, My Britt, at this point. The two had had three children together, one biological and two adopted, but the couple never really spent much time together. As we were talking about earlier, Sammy Davis Jr. was a powerhouse. He was always working.
And he'd been having quite a few orgies as well.
That is true. He had been as well. Now, he was taking as much work as he could get, and it kept him away from his family. And finally, he actually admitted to having an affair, which destroyed his marriage, and that pushed him actually even more towards drinking.
Booze, it seems like a quick solution that creates more problems in the long run.
Yeah. Now, he drank so much alcohol that he ended up being diagnosed with a diseased liver.
That takes a lot of alcohol, you know?
It takes a lot. It was to the point that doctors told him that he would die if he took another drink.
Jesus Christ.
Now, luckily for the entertainment world, he did as he was told, and he did stop drinking completely, although he still smoked.
Is this his true downfall?
We'll see. Now, it was following this unfortunate diagnosis with his liver that he began working really hard to better himself in many ways. He actually apparently became a very good cook. Such a great cook that even Bill Cosby himself spoke about his cooking prowess.
Go back, 10 years? That would have been a better endorsement of his cooking skills.
Exactly.
Not so good now.
Yeah, one of the documentaries that I watched did not age well. It had Bill Cosby on there a few times, and I'm like thinking, Jesus, this guy is so calm for somebody that's raped so many women.
That's a lot of rape.
He's been very calm. But after this, Davis also built up his career back from the brink of destruction. He did this with a few amazing acting roles in films and plays, and with a hit single with Candyman. And you'll remember that from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The Candyman can... For some reason, none of the singles that he was releasing prior to this really hit it big. I mean, he had a number 11 single, I think it was, but Candyman, for some reason in the 70s, just shot up the charts, and it was a number one.
Jesus.
Which brought him back, and he rode that for another 10 years.
if you can get 10 years out of one song, you know what you're doing, all right, especially in the 70s.
I do not care what it is. If I sing Baby Shark and it gives me 10 years of work, hell yeah, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's not selling out. That's making a living. He was partying. That's how you afford these fucking orgies, man.
Yeah, man, if you want orgies, you have to sell out.
Yeah. You can't just have orgies. People just don't have orgies.
There's never been a poor person orgy. I'm putting out there. Actually, no, I think homeless people like to orgy, don't they? So it should have a different name. It should have a different name.
I don't know, man, if homeless people all have orgies. I feel like most orgies at least involve one homeowner.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, only rich people have orgies.
Just one person with a mortgage. I feel like that's like the bare minimum of an orgy.
Yeah. And it has to be a big enough house to host enough people comfortably.
That's true, yeah. That was definitely Sammy Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this time, he was also dating his soon-to-be third wife, Altaviz Gore. Now, the two were actually married in 1970, and Sammy Davis Jr. seemed to be really pretty much actually on the mend from his wild years.
What was her name? Altaviz Gore?
Yes.
Al Gore.
Yeah.
Super ethereal.
Didn't even put that together. Yeah, well, she's referred to as Altaviz Davis, obviously, because she's married. But no, that's funny. I never put that together. That's hilarious. Now, by the 1980s, Sammy Davis Jr. was seen as a legend. People had actually forgotten his whole friendship with Nixon, and he was revered for the work he had done in the arts. And also, since his diseased liver diagnosis, he had donated a lot of money to liver research and medical research. He had donated a lot of money and done a lot of good for people. So by this point, by the 1980s, he had his whole reputation had seen this awesome comeback. And he even actually starred in an incredible 80s film called Tap, where he plays an aging tap dancer who could tap dance better than literally anyone in the film.
How old would he be at this point?
He's in his 60s at this point.
Oh, so he's getting on.
He's getting on, yeah. But arguably older than 60 due to the partying.
Yeah.
Health-wise. Now, this film, Tap, is an incredibly impressive watch. I would definitely suggest you watch it. Now, if you were to call this period in Sammy Davis Jr.'s life anything, you would really call this a comeback.
Yeah.
But then came the tickle.
The tickle?
In August 1989, Davis began complaining of a tickle in his throat and an inability to taste food. Doctors found a cancerous tumor in his throat, and he was diagnosed with throat cancer.
Not a good one. No cancer's a good cancer, but that's a bad one.
It's very bad. It's a very aggressive form of cancer, what he had. I think it was carcinoma, maybe, but I'm not 100% sure. But he did have a very aggressive form of cancer. He was told that he had the best chance of survival if they removed a portion of his throat instead of using chemotherapy.
Which means he won't be able to sing, I'm assuming?
Yeah. However, he told the doctors that he'd rather die than lose his voice. So he began to undergo chemotherapy and radiation. Which leads us to another very unfortunate moment in Sammy Davis Jr.'s story.
I'm trying to make a prediction on what this is, but I feel like it could go anywhere.
It'll actually go somewhere different than you're expecting.
Okay.
In the interim. There's a lot of ups and downs still to come. Now, while he was undergoing treatment for his cancer, there was also an event being planned for Davis to celebrate his 60 years in show business, because he started when he was 3.
Yeah.
Obviously. So he's celebrating his whole life, basically.
Yeah, literally.
And this would be a large variety show. It was going to include many different performers paying tribute to Sammy Davis Jr. himself. This was also meant to include a performance by Sammy Davis Jr., but he was too ill due to his treatment to perform. Which I think is incredibly sad.
Yeah, because again, with how his work ethic is as well, like he would have, nine times out of 10, he would have overcome most things to perform that show.
Oh, absolutely.
Chemotherapy is no joke, man.
No, it's not, man. It really knocked him out. And this show included tap dancers, things that he loved to do, singing, tap dancing, everything. These are the things that he did his entire life. But towards the end of the show, the feelings just overwhelmed him. So he decided to put on his tap shoes right there in the audience. The audience cheered while he took the stage with fellow tap dancer Gregory Hines, and he proceeded to deliver one of the most incredible tap dances you could hope to see, making it look effortless compared to the younger Gregory Hines.
All while he's going through chemotherapy, which, like you said, does fuck you up. Like.
It does fuck you up. It was an incredible performance. And it was also Sammy Davis Jr.'s final performance.
Really?
On May 16th, 1990, Sammy Davis Jr. passed away in his home in Beverly Hills, California at the age of 64 due to his cancer. 2 days following his death, the neon lights of the Las Vegas Strip were darkened for 10 minutes as a tribute.
Hmm.
However, this is not the final unfortunate portion to this story. Following his death, it was found that Sammy Davis Jr. had spent a lot more than he had earned.
Ah.
He was also found to owe back taxes of up to $7 million to the IRS, and his estate was only valued at about $4 or $5 million.
Fuck.
And because she had co-signed his taxes, his wife, Altavise Davis, became liable for his tax debts.
Fucking hell.
That would not normally be the case had she not co-signed his taxes. She was forced to auction off all of his personal possessions and real estate. She was made to work minimum wage jobs, and she ended up moving back into her parents' home. And Altavise Davis was actually quoted as saying that the real true story of Sammy Davis Jr. has yet to be told. But I'm actually not sure if she herself was actually able to ever tell it.
Yeah, I could understand if she had a burning resentment for the man for what she's put through. So,
absolutely, man,
might be worth taking that with a grain of salt. But who knows?
I can imagine I would be pretty upset if I was left with a $2 million debt
and literally nothing. Like nothing. They've got kids as well. Well, that would grow, in law, I suppose.
I will say that a lot of black musicians got together and did a really big show to raise money for her and for the family. And then she also did settle with the IRS eventually. So she did. She was able to actually clear out the debts eventually, but it did leave a pretty big mark on her.
Well, imagine being left with people's bills who aren't yours. Like, I find my own bills annoying and they're not that bad. Like,
at that point, they're evil. Like, they're not.
Yeah, that's.
They're the Church of Satan.
Like, yeah. Rise up, Satan. Save me. Think of all the orgies I had in your name.
Save me from this debt. I feel like Satan has so much better stuff to do. He's watching the Kray twins jerk themselves off face to face. And he's working on making it drier and drier with each stroke.
I don't know what to think of it, but I just can't stop watching.
Their faces are so contorted.
It's like watching a car crash. Like, you just can't look away.
Well, as unfortunate as all of that with Sammy Davis Jr.'s wife may be, I believe there is another unfortunate thing to remember in the story of Sammy Davis Jr. Now, from the moment he was on his own as an adult, he was subjected to terrible racism on a daily occurrence. We didn't go into detail on the racism he received while in the Rat Pack specifically, but there are claims that a lot did occur. However, Davis knew that he had to find a way to fight back against racism, like we said. And however he fought it, he was going to do it his way. And he found his way of fighting back. This was through his music, with the use of his voice and other talents. He wielded his voice, obviously in connection with his throat, like a sword against the racism he was experiencing. And I find it poetically unjust that it was also the same thing that killed him. And that is what's truly unfortunate.
Truly, truly unfortunate.
And that's the story of Sammy Davis Jr., everybody. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, man. I actually, when his death came out, I was a bit sad there. I felt like we'd got to know old Sammy a bit.
That was what I was hoping, actually.
Yeah, I did kind of get that feeling. I've learned a bit about Sammy Davis Jr. and what an incredible guy he was. And again, like you said in that, in what you said at the end there, it is unfortunate that the thing that gave him so much success. And he used, you know, like he wielded like a sword in his fight against racism, was what took him down in the end.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's very unjust, I think. Mm-hmm. But also, I need to point out, he did smoke 4 packs a day as an adult.
You kind of boy it on himself.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be careful with cigarettes as well. You know, they can cause cancer. I mean, just
basically, you can't do anything that's fun. Because it'll kill you.
Yeah, stop it. Stop all that having fun, guys. Stop all that laughing.
Stop those orgies. No orgies.
No orgies. Yeah, unless you have a mortgage.
and you have above 50k in your bank.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed the episode, Greg. I did want to convey that point of getting to know Sammy Davis Jr. and really being sad for his passing, because I am sad for his passing.
I am too.
But listeners, I hope you felt the same way. And if you did feel the same way, I would really ask you to email us at info@unfortunatehistory.com and let us know how you felt about this story, because I put a lot of work into this one, and I hope you enjoyed it. I really do. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to get into some housekeeping, I think.
Yep, let's get into it. Again, first off, I think I was going to kick off with a big thank you to the people from the Last Podcast on the Left and the Roundtable of Gentlemen podcast for literally so much support that we've got in the past couple of days.
Yeah, you posted some information about the podcast in the groups, right, on Facebook?
I did, yeah. That's how I went about it. Because obviously, look, you've given me the keys to the social medias.
Let me say, I gave Greg the passwords to the social medias for an hour, and he tried to hijack one of the biggest show podcasts in the world right now. So.
I guess with me, the term the audacity comes up a lot. Like, but I don't think these things through, but it actually paid off. I think the Last Podcast guys took it down, but the guys on the Roundtable of Gentlemen, they've ran with it. They've had nothing but kind words off them as well. So,
oh yeah, and I'll say that Greg sent me some of the comments and listeners from the Last Podcast groups and everybody else as well, but to you guys that came new and stuff, some of the comments you were saying that were being so supportive, that really means a lot to us. And I think that's incredible. And honestly, I would be humbled to share some of the same fans that the Last Podcast has. If you all act that same way, I'm absolutely humbled and blown away and more than happy to have you guys as listeners on our podcast. Mm-hmm. It means so much. And I'm having a fan base like that is definitely something special.
Yeah. Again, in a day and age where it's so easy to shoot things down.
Yeah.
Look, start things like, especially over the internet, especially over Facebook, you do see it's majority negative stuff from people on creative things like this. But there literally wasn't a bad post. Like, I was expecting at least one, fuck you, you know what I mean? Like, shit, fuck off, get off this. I didn't get any of that.
No, we actually got a ton of followers, a ton of downloads, we've gotten like 15% more downloads than we would have normally gotten. So you guys are incredible. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the Unfortunate History fan base, hopefully, if you guys are enjoying it. And I mean, I think we need to think of a name for these
listeners.
Yeah, the listeners. Yeah. I think the Unfortunates sounds pretty cool.
The Unfortunates.
Yeah, man.
You know what? I'll run with that.
Yeah, the Unfortunates. We'll see. We've got so much running with the Unfortunate brand. I think we're overusing it at some point. But thank you guys so much. It really means a lot. So if you enjoy this podcast, please just show your family and tell your friends. It helps us out so much. We hope that you guys enjoy the show enough to share it with people. That's the end of, isn't it? It's if you guys care enough and you're entertained enough to show other people you know, that makes me proud.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think we should close it out now. So if you want to follow the show, just go to unfortunatehistory.com. And go down to the bottom of the page, type in your email address and sign up for the subscribe option. We'll be doing quite a bit of stuff on that soon. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington. Greg?
If you want to follow me, I am currently back as a Flight of the Emu.
Yeah.
I liked it more than the Bloody Eagle.
Yeah.
But, and then on Facebook, Greg Skinner. Also, if you'd like, I currently hold the keys to the socials. So if you want to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, just look up Unfortunate History. We should be posting quite regularly on that now.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, if you want to follow us, go to them.
Yeah, definitely do that. Please, thank you guys so much for your support. But unfortunately, we got to go. So stay unfortunate.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ta-ra.
Bye.